This is HPC Wire Soundbite, your weekly source of commentary and insight on the HPC stories shaping the industry. With Michael Feldman, editor of HPC Wire, and Addison Snell, CEO of Intersect 360 Research. And now, here are your hosts, Michael Feldman and Addison Snell.
Cray closes the books on 2009 and Winter Olympic-style supercomputing. Hello, everyone, and good morning for HPC Wire Soundbite for February 19th, 2010, available every Friday on iTunes. I'm Michael Feldman, editor of HPC Wire, and sitting in for the vacationing Addison Snell is his colleague Chris Willard, Chief Research Officer for Intersect 360 Research. Good morning, Chris.
Morning, Michael. How are you doing?
Good. Well, Chris, I know you don't have a television, but there's this global event going on called the Winter Olympics. There's a supercomputing hook into that this year. Have you been following the Olympics anywhere else?
Well, I get a regular news feed on my PC, so I can keep track of who's winning what. And I suppose if, as I do with other sports events, look up video on the internet as well and see how things actually ran.
Yeah, I actually haven't been following it that closely, but I just was surprised to see sort of this supercomputing angle to it this year. We'll get to that in just a second. First, let's talk about the Cray story, which I wrote up about this week in HPC Wire. They just wrapped up their 2009 financial results with an investor call with the fourth quarter they just finished, and then the full year results as well. They had a pretty good year. They had record revenue of $284 million, a little bit up from last year, and they just missed making a profit. They were just $600,000 short off of a profit, which basically on a $284 million revenues, basically they broke even. So it's a big improvement, and they seemed rather pleased with themselves this year on the call, and the investors seemed very kind to Cray as well. Everybody seemed pretty upbeat about their chances for 2010. One thing they're particularly upbeat about, it seems like, was their growth of some of their new ventures, which is custom engineering, which goes into their service revenue, their CX1 desk side system, and their XT mini systems. And just those three together accounted for $40 million in revenue this year. So they were pretty happy about that. And they were pretty happy that their portfolio is a little more diversified than it's ever been, and they don't have to rely so heavily on these big supercomputing system sales anymore, which they're still relying on, obviously, to some extent. But they seem to talk about that quite a bit. Now, you read a little bit about it as well, Chris. What was sort of your take on Cray's results for the year?
Well, I think they are very positive results. It's good to see a high-end company getting closer to being in the black, at least, or almost in the black. I think the services business is, you know, perhaps a secret weapon for Cray, that it has traditionally been a company that has provided computing solutions that simply are not available in the general marketplace. And that's been their reason for existence from the very beginning, and an area where they can develop strength, get a lot of smart people on board, and then to allow them to work on very challenging problems. And this provides both an underlying core business that helps them make it through the tough times, and also a certain amount of client buy-in, that if you have this resource available, then some clients will work hard to make sure it remains available through the downtimes.
Yeah, I mean, the service revenue for Cray looked very good this year. It was like $85 million for the year versus $199 million for the products, which is a good chunk of their revenue, obviously, and it's $20 million more than last year. This seems to be a growing source of money for Cray, probably some of it due to custom engineering, but probably just like you said, some of it's just service contracts. We were just chatting about this before the call, the expense of the service contracts for customers versus hardware. Can you kind of reiterate what we were talking about as far as like the value of service or the non-value of service for HPC customers?
Traditionally, for HPC companies, the services revenue has been between 25 and 30% of total revenue, which Cray is falling into now. A lot of that is just simply maintenance and repair. Some of it is systems engineering work on the front end. Some of it, as we said, is this very high-end research and development of new products or technology work. And then some of it's just optimization of systems as it goes along. In the cluster world, we've seen less emphasis on maintenance and repair by some sites that, at least anecdotally, I've talked to people who've said, well, we will just overbuy by 10% in terms of nodes on our cluster and expect during the life of the system that those that will lose those 10% and still be able to maintain our service level agreement, and that is less hassle and less cost than buying a service contract, particularly for a high-end system.
I think Cray's probably in a sort of unique position as far as service revenue. They're not like a typical cluster maker where, you know, maybe the customer wouldn't buy a full service contract. I mean, these are more specialized systems, so I think Cray can more count on some sort of service contract to go along with all at least their big systems. Now, maybe not their CX1 systems, maybe not so much their even XT minis, but certainly their big XT systems. I'm assuming you're always going to buy a service contract from Cray, wouldn't you say?
Certainly with higher end systems, a service contract is something most people would really need. The system becomes more mission critical. You can't afford the luxury of having the system go down and then spending a while trying to figure out what went wrong and bring it back up again. And also, as these higher end systems become more complex, it's not really reasonable to think that someone can maintain it in house without some extra expertise and parts. On the other side of the equation, that if you go back historically, you can find that the cost of a service contract can oftentimes be the reason that a user has decided to switch technologies. Back with the movement away from vector systems to risk-based systems, that one of the common comments was, I can buy a risk-based system with as much at least theoretical power as my vector system for the cost of the maintenance contract. So that it's a balancing act that the companies have to maintain, that they don't try to bring in so much money from services that they begin to cause their users to start thinking about alternatives.
Right. Well, I think Cray's in pretty good shape here. And like I said, their service revenue seems to be growing and pushed certainly by their custom engineering work. And you mentioned, you know, that one of their first contracts for 2010 in custom engineering, which involved non-HPC application. I mean, they didn't talk about it when they were talking about the results too much. The name of the customer is still under wraps, and the details of the contract. But apparently there is this large commercial company that's contracted Cray to prototype some future infrastructure for a cloud computing type data center, whether that's a search engine data center or more commercially oriented data center, nobody's sure. But it's significant in that, you know, the Cray is not known for, you know, non-HPC work, and this represents possibly sort of a new way for them to start siphoning money out of the broader computing market. I thought that was sort of interesting.
You know, I think at the high end, this may be where the real competition is going to show up. We call this area the edge HPC market, and it includes internet infrastructure, complex event processing. IBM has been talking about power grid management that picks up data from everyone's meters in their houses and then tries to figure out the best way to distribute the power, electricity for an area at a given time. And some of the standard business optimization, data warehousing, business intelligence applications. I think that this area may prove to be the sort of the next frontier for the traditional supercomputing market. And subsequently, we've given it a different name, the edge HPC. And there's a potential for a great deal of sales, a lot of opportunity in this area.
So IBM did recently actually talk about their new IBM Power 7 servers, including the HPC version, which is the Power 755 server, which supposedly is shipping today, February 19th, in volume. Now, that was actually sort of mentioned or alluded to on the Cray investor call, because somebody asked about, you know, how they think, you know, the XT6 and the Baker systems are going to match up against, you know, IBM's newest technology. And Peter Ngaro basically, you know, thought the Power 7 systems looked good and will be a good product for them, but he basically felt, you know, he liked his chances in this market, and at the high end, he thinks the Baker systems will do quite well. I mean, the Power 7 systems are interesting. I mean, those are obviously, they're not based on the AMD technology, Opteron technology, that the Cray systems, the XT systems are based on, but they're definitely going for the high end. Those are going to be the ones that are going to the Blue Waters multi-petaflop system at NCSA, and also they're associated with the PERCS architecture as part of the HPCS DARPA program. So it looks like IBM's putting a lot of emphasis and marketing and story behind those Power 7 servers. I think they're going to be the sort of the big story in HPC, maybe even over above BlueJean for the next couple of years, maybe. What was sort of your impression of how IBM is positioning these new Power 7 systems?
I agree with you. That looks like the Power 7 is going to be their lead HPC product. It was originally intended to be a one-off system, but when it came out, people looked at it and decided that it was a system that they would like internally as well. And so IBM ended up with a product that it never originally intended to build. So the company now has two high-end product lines.
Right.
I suspect that it will continue to support BlueJean as long as there is strong customer demand for it. But I would also think, in terms of general business model, that any company would prefer not to have too many product lines addressing a relatively small market space. And it would be, I have no internal information on IBM, but I think it's a good assumption to say that they would prefer to just have one system in that area, and that system would be one that was compatible with the rest of their product line.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, when IBM talks, it seems like they talk much more enthusiastically about the Power products than anything else, and maybe that's just from a corporate point of view, since they are, that technology is into so many domains in the company, but yeah, it does seem like there's more enthusiasm behind that in general. The other story that caught my attention this week also has an IBM hook into it. It's the Winter Olympics story, where this the bobsled team is actually using IBM infrastructure to do to model their bobsled design. In this case, the infrastructure is not based on Power architecture, it's based on the x86 architecture, and it's actually using the on-demand version of IBM supercomputing, along with some interesting software from Exa Corporation. So the whole model there is essentially like cloud computing or utility computing, if you want to be more precise there. And obviously this doesn't have anything to do with, you know, IBM's high-end supercomputing, but I thought it was quite an interesting story in as much as, you know, basically a small team with, you know, limited funds and limited sponsorship, I would assume, is able to buy essentially 19 teraflops of computing power basically by renting it. And I think it was like 384 IBM system 3550 and 3450 blade servers. And I'm not sure how long they rented it for, but I think in the article that I noted in PC World, it basically says what used to take them weeks or days to mock up in a wind tunnel now took them about 8 hours to do, which I thought was quite interesting. Actually, this bobsled team is going to go into competition, I think, starting tomorrow, this weekend. And so we'll see how they do. But that was an interesting story that came up. And it made me wonder if anybody other teams on the Winter Olympics is actually using any sort of supercomputing technology. But what did you think of that story? I know you just kind of glanced at it, but what was your impression?
My impressions were very, very close to yours. That it it's interesting that, historically in sports, supercomputers have been used on, big ticket items like America's Cup boats and on high-end racing cars. As you said, it's hard to imagine that that a bobsled team is going to be able to raise a tremendous amount of capital, and so it's indicative of the capabilities of, utility computing to support people who need a lot of power for a short amount of time and with limited budgets. I think the other interesting part that may get lost in it from a business point of view is their work with EXA. This is really a software as a services business model. EXA has been CFD software market for quite some time. It has been a partner with IBM's Utility Computing Group for, quite some time, and has pretty much run a model where most or a good deal of their revenue comes through software sales, and the access to IBM's computing facilities allows them to help clients get up and running quickly and to solve special purpose problems or special demand problems more accurately without having to modify their internal computing environments. And that there's probably a more interesting business story around how EXA is able to leverage the cloud to extend its business capabilities here. Certainly, the bobsled people could not have gotten up and running so quickly if they hadn't been able to get a hold of both the software to address the problems and probably the expertise to make it all work. The issues we find around entering supercomputing for smaller organizations are generally not so much around absolute power of and getting a lot of cycles available as much as they are around the getting the problem started and getting the basic model built, getting the software working, getting the workflow process working properly. And probably the bobsled team could not have gotten this process running so quickly if they were just going to a standard cycles for nothing sort of a cloud operation. But we're instead able to work through an organization that was able to provide some services and consulting along the way. I don't know if they had to pay for that or not, but it demonstrates our sort of view of the marketplace that the real opportunities are going to be for value-added organizations in the market rather than the simple raw cycle providers.
Right, and I would expect, especially with if you're looking to sort of expand your footprint here to a lot of smaller users like sports teams. I mean, you can envision a day where every sports team will have some IT budget that they'll be able to apply to with this sort of model. This does seem like a very useful model that will be able to help democratize the use of software like this. So it'll be interesting to see if this will start something. It'll be interesting to see if the bobsled team does well and if it sort of catches on. And then in 2012, 2016, we'll see every sports team with an IT budget and being able to do similar types of things.
Well, what I'm waiting for is a NASCAR driver to have a software company patch alongside the Pennzoil oil patch on their
right
uniform.
That's when we'll know it's arrived, that's for sure. All right, Chris. Well, I think that wraps it up for this week. That was a kind of an interesting week, a couple of different stories. But until next week, thanks again for joining us, Chris, and subbing for Addison. And we'll hope to talk to you soon.
Been a pleasure, Michael.
You've been listening to HPC Wire Soundbite with Michael Feldman and Addison Snell. Got a question or comment for Michael or Addison? Email soundbite@hpcwire.com. HPC Wire Soundbite is available every Friday afternoon from iTunes or at hpcwire.com. HPC Wire, the leading source for global news and information covering the ecosystem of high productivity computing.